Now, let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're delighted that you're hanging in there with us. We're looking forward to your dialogue and discussion. Let me remind you that telephone number is 831-0917, 831-0917. If you'd like to jump into the dialogue and discussion, we'd love to have your input. What do you think about the two articles of impeachment? Do you think that they're justified? Do you think that they're illegitimate? What do you think? Do you think that we need to, as Christians, become involved, say something, speak up, stand up? Do we need to be watchmen on the wall? We're talking today with one of our four sons, Greg Youngblood. Greg is with us to discuss the articles of impeachment, some of the things leading up to it, and how we should view it, and what we should think about it, and what we should do. So, ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States has authority under Article 3 of our Constitution to protect America. He has the responsibility and the authority to hold up any direct foreign funds or any national issues. It's his responsibility to do so as president. He is the executive that is on the cutting edge, responsible for the leadership in our nation. So, Greg, with that being said, they're claiming that he had abused his power. What is it in Article 3 that the president has done beyond his constitutional privilege, his constitutional rights and remedies? What is it that the president has done that's illegal? What does Article 3 encompass? And is the president out of bounds with that? So, in fact, and bottom line of what I'm asking, Greg, has he abused his power as president of the United States?
Well, first off, it's Article 2 dealing with the presidency. Article
yes.
1 with the House and Senate.
Right, you're right.
Article 2, not the president. The judiciary. Nonetheless, it's interesting that these crazy folks, as Ned Nadler and Schiff and others, you know, identify these articles of impeachment being abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. You know, after 2.5 years of investigation, steady harassment, after providing millions of pages of documents, you know, Trump provided, you know, ordered that basically everything that they wanted, give it to them. After he provided unprecedented access to personnel and communications, essentially everything was given that they ever wanted. Mueller had full access. Congress had full access. Trump finally, after the Mueller report came out, and the Mueller report says no collusion. By the way, understand, Schiff and Pelosi are still talking about Russian collusion. It is absolutely
yes.
insane.
Yes.
Nonetheless, finally, Trump did exactly what you know, other presidents have done, and he said, "Okay, you know, I'm done with this." And he finally claimed the same exact privilege that Obama claimed hundreds and hundreds of times. Now, that is what Nadler and Schiff and Pelosi calling obstruction. You know, it's nuts. Because, you know, Nadler, Schiff, and Pelosi can and have challenged executive privilege in the courts. But the courts, you know, using the laws that they and Congress have created, those courts aren't fast enough, according to them. And now they're saying, if you go to the courts, if you claim executive privilege and you put these things in the courts, somehow or another, that's obstruction of Congress. Jonathan Turley was that fourth person, attorney on the other day. A professor and an attorney, Jonathan Turley, said something very poignant. By the way, he's not a Trump supporter. He told Congress, if you make going to the courts an abuse of power, it will be an abuse of power, your abuse of power. Literally, they're saying because you didn't just keep everything coming, because you actually decided, you know what, I have rights. And keep in mind, just like I begged the question earlier, if they can rip to shreds the President of the United States, deny him any protection of the courts, what will they do to you? What will they do to me? There was a woman years ago in Texas that started a group, True the Vote. They were analyzing votes to see if people were double-enrolled, enrolled in multiple states, or if dead people were enrolled. It was amazing. She and her husband never had problems with the FBI, ATF, or IRS, and all of a sudden, overnight, had a full-blown ATF raid. Well, they didn't find anything. Then the FBI raid didn't find anything, but it was harassment. Then the IRS audited each husband and wife and then each one of their businesses. The left, the Democrats have used every agency and every tool of government to gain power, to gain power and to go after their perceived foes. It is disgusting to now say the President of the United States, because he claims executive privilege, because things end up in the courts, to call that an abuse of power. My goodness, folks, the Democrats are guilty of exactly the things that they're now alleging and accusing President Trump of.
Greg, I find it fascinating that you say that. In fact, for the benefit of our listeners, Alan Dershowitz is a constitutional attorney, retired. He's a professor emeritus from Harvard Law School, and he's a Democrat. And he says the impeachment case doesn't meet any credible legal standard. I'm reading from an article. Renowned criminal defense attorney Alan Dershowitz thinks that President Donald Trump's phone call to Ukraine does not meet the standard of bribery set forth in common law. You see, Greg, for the benefit of our listeners, they first started out calling it quid pro quo, Latin term simply meaning pay for play, then they changed it to bribery, and they tried to make that stick. They had focus groups trying to tell them as to what's the best term to use, and so they decided just to call it abuse of power. And the abuse of power comes out of the fact that he withheld for 55 days about a $400 million gift to Ukraine. By the way, for the benefit of those listening, I'm adamantly opposed to that. I'm adamantly opposed to America trying to buy the friendship of nations around the globe by the hundreds and hundreds of billions, even into the trillions of dollars, coming out of the taxpayers' pockets in America, where some can't even buy a home, pay the payments on the home, or pay their bills, but get taxes going for things of that nature. But that's another story for another time. Dershowitz says it can't operate when you're the president of the United States and you're conditioning or withholding money in order to make sure that the country isn't corrupt, and you're asking them to investigate. Dershowitz told Mark Levin in an interview that's scheduled to air. That doesn't fit any definition of bribery, common law definition of bribery, statutory definition of bribery either. However, you define the constitutional word bribery, it just doesn't fit, he said. But here's the crux of the article from Alan Dershowitz. First, they came up with abuse of power, not a crime at all, Dershowitz says. It's not in the Constitution. So now they're saying bribery. They're trying to make it up, he said. There is no CEs for bribery, case for bribery, on anything that's allegation against the president today. They cannot prove it. It's not provable, he says, end quote. The point is that I wanted our listeners to understand abuse of power simply because as the executive in responsibility based on our Constitution, he makes a determination based on foreign relations and the policy therein. And he determines that until we make sure that there's no more corruption in Ukraine, we're not going to release the funds. So they're hanging that, Greg and ladies and gentlemen, that's the term they're using, abuse of power, that he had no authority to do that. And
the folks in the Department of State and the Department of Justice, tons of them, as if they've taken the stand and witnessed to things they know nothing of, one after another believe that they are smarter than the president and that they should set foreign policy. Matter of fact, Vindman, if you'd listen to his language, all of his words, and his arrogance, his haughtiness, you would think that he believes he should set foreign policy. Now, when it was put to him, he finally agreed, yeah, I don't set foreign policy. The president of the United States does. But when it deals with foreign fraud, foreign scams, foreign misuse, abuse, malfeasance, over and over and over, we've seen that dollars that we send out, I mean, those dollars we sent to rebuild Haiti, many of those flowed back to the Clintons through the Clinton Initiative. Those dollars, of course, going to Ukraine. Here we were, by the way, this is a little side note, but it was perverse. We were supporting Ukrainian energy development, particularly oil and gas exploration over there. We're spending tax, I mean, you give your tax dollars to the government, and they were giving them to Ukraine to help them with their energy production at the same time that over here we're told we shouldn't pull that stuff out of the ground. That's horrible, man. We're going to have carbon emissions. We're going to destroy the planet, this and that and the other thing. They want for us, the left would like for all of us to ride bicycles, okay? Matter of fact, you can't even have those without gas and oil. But they would like for us to ride bicycles and depress, suppress, destroy our economy while enhance the economies of places like Ukraine and, of course, China. But step back in time. Donald Trump was eviscerated publicly for pointing out the fact or suggesting that Puerto Rico may have some fraudulent players, some corrupt dealings going on. Oh, my goodness, he was a horrible person. He was a horrible person. About a year and a half later, finally, we have a series of officials that go off to the pokey because they're corrupt in Puerto Rico. Now, you have the same question marks about Ukraine because this fellow, as he comes into office, he's surrounding himself with some of the same people that his predecessor did, and he knew that Ukraine was listed as one of the most fraud, scam, infested, corrupt, infested nations in Europe. And guess what? They were, and they are elements. I had somebody in attempting to defend Ukraine the other day said, well, he had two reports from DOD that indicated that they had made substantial advancements. And I go, okay, well, first off, substantial advancements do not mean that they are corruption-free. Second off, the DOD operated in concert with the Department of State, which is still, to this day, full of Hillary Clinton acolytes that hate Donald Trump. Agency by agency by agency, we still have a prevalence of at the top, and I don't know what the numbers are down through the agencies, but certainly those individuals at the top, like your Vindman, like this Professor Hill, like one after another, they hate Donald Trump, and they will skew and twist everything to the worst end for President Trump. So the long and short is there's fraud there today. There was fraud there and corruption there in the past. Donald Trump had every not only responsibility under the law to see that corruption was not taking over and misusing and abusing the funds and resources that hard-earned taxpayer dollars were going to fund.
Absolutely. And the thing that we need to reiterate for our listeners to understand, as President of the United States, the President is the one solely responsible for foreign policy. And all of these underlings that are wannabe leaders that were interviewed by Adam Schiff's committee, a kangaroo court, chaos set in, and they were all of the opinion that they should make foreign policy, that their position should be the position that's taken by the president. And you touched on it a moment ago with those accolades of Clinton that's still embeds. That's part of your shadow government. And for our listeners' understanding, when President Donald J. Trump took the sworn in and took the Oval Office, he had 4,100 Obama holdovers, leftovers in the every department, including the State Department and DOJ and the other places that he has to deal with. And it's through those that are dragging their heels, digging the heels in, trying to find every excuse to destroy him. And Greg, that brings me to the point of talking about the so-called whistleblower. He's not a whistleblower. In fact, his name has already been put out in the open media, but it was restrained in the two committees with Nadler and Schiff that you could not call his name even. But he's not a whistleblower. He's an embed CIA underling that was assigned at one time to the White House, and he's the one that was cultivated by Adam Schiff over a month before the inquiry was brought to light. Adam Schiff has lied several. He needs to be put under oath. He's lied and lied and lied that he doesn't know who the whistleblower is, that he's never met him, never talked with him, howbeit he may not have personally, but he has talked with him through his staff, and he knows who the whistleblower is. And he is not a legitimate whistleblower. He was set up. He was put in place. He was invited to give the complaint. He was invited, in my most humble opinion, for them to use it just as Stone and Manafort and others were used to initiate the so-called investigation in the Trump campaign that brought about all of the Russian collusion and the Mueller report, et cetera, et cetera. This so-called whistleblower is the one that they used as they opened the door of Pandora's box to bring about what they're attempting to do now. Greg, I want to take a moment and kind of shift gears. In the Attorney General's response to the Horowitz report, the Horowitz report has several things. In fact, I'm looking at an article that says, statement by Attorney General William P. Barr on the Inspector General's report of the review of the four FISA applications and other aspects of the FBI's Crossfire Hurricane. That's what they called it, the Crossfire Hurricane investigation. And William Barr basically challenged the Horowitz report. And under the Horowitz report, there's about 10 or 15 major points, and we'll talk about those for our listeners to understand in a moment, the key elements of the Horowitz report. And I call it the horrible report because he didn't have, I believe Horowitz didn't have the spine, the backbone, to stand against the shadow government. He was an appointee by Barack Hussein Obama, carryover under the Trump administration. But William Barr said, the FBI launched an intrusive investigation. Secondly, he said, the investigation was on the thinnest of suspicions. Thirdly, he says the campaign and the president, were surveilled without authority. Fourth, he says the FBI officials misled the FISA court, omitting crucial information about the involvement of Clinton and the DNC. Number five, the Inspector General's report found that the FBI and other officials did not give any satisfactory answers as to why they had done what they did. In other words, for the benefit of our listeners, Greg, elaborate on that some. Basically, a Horowitz report gave about 17 different things. It was kind of, as you call them, oops, 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 but didn't assign any intent or any political bias with that. Explain that to me. I don't understand it.
Is that not evidence of bias? Literally, forceps found inside the patient. Now, we don't need to go back and ask if the doctor made a mistake. We know he made a mistake. In this particular case, we have when the preponderance of the evidence points to something, you know it's real. It's kind of like the cover-up, watching Hillary Clinton. How do you know Hillary Clinton was guilty? Well, because the cover-up was pretty extreme. I mean, she was erasing, you know, tens of thousands of emails. I mean, we know the person was guilty, and it's kind of like a courtroom where a person has been found to have perjured themselves. If they perjured themselves once, then you can disregard all their testimony. Their mistakes always lent themselves toward doing damage to Trump or helping Hillary. Even when Jim Comey stood on the stood in front of the cameras and he articulated all the criminal acts of Hillary Clinton, I'm listening with bated breath. You know, I'm right on the edge of my seat. I'm listening to every word, going, another criminal offense, another criminal offense. He's about to, you know, hand down an indictment right here on national TV, and then he says, no reasonable attorney would bring a case. And I'm going, oh my goodness. So we bend all the rules to make sure Hillary doesn't face any consequences for her, all of her illegalities. And then you create a sham, faux Russian meddling, Trump Russian collusion case, and you run with that ball for 2.5 years. I mean, this entire thing, again, to the earliest days, it was fake. It was fraud. It was a setup, and it was intended to put a cloud over Trump. You know, I'm going to brag on you for a second. In a former life, what did you do? You bought, sold, and brokered thousands of pieces of real estate. Am I right?
Yes.
That's right.
That's right.
If someone puts a cloud, a non-legitimate cloud on a title, they go down and record a lien that is that criminal? That's a bad thing to do, right? But that person that owns a piece of property in which this cloud is on the title, they can't sell it until that cloud is cleared, because they can't get a title policy until that cloud is cleared up. I think I'm right on that. Am I right on that?
Exactly right, and that's what you're illustrating so clearly and distinctly, is that what they're doing, and we want to talk about that, they're putting a cloud on the presidency of Donald J. Trump. And I'll talk about it in a moment, Greg, but there is an ulterior motive and a game plan that they have. In fact, Greg, here's an article. U.S. Attorney Durham objects to the IG's findings on Russia probe origins in a stunning statement. In fact, he says, based on the evidence collected to date, and while our investigation is ongoing, last month we advised the Inspector General that we do not agree with some of his reports and the conclusions and the predications on how the FBI case was opened, end quote. Written by U.S. Attorney John Durham, said in his written statement to them. He said, I have the utmost respect for the mission of the Office of Inspector General and the comprehensive work that went into the report prepared by Mr. Horowitz and his staff. Durham said, however, our investigation, talking about the Durham's investigation, our investigation is not limited to developing information from within component parts of the Justice Department. Our investigation has included developing information from other persons, entities both in the U.S. and outside the U.S., end quote. So, Greg, and for the benefit of our listeners, Durham's report is still to come out. William Barr is also doing his own personal investigation. He's flown to Australia. He's flown to England. He's flown to the Ukraine, and he is pulling the pieces together. And it's going to be, in my opinion, absolutely astounding as to what he finds and what the ultimate report will be. Now, my projection is, and I could be totally wrong, I believe that it will be at the heat, the apex of the election in 2020. I believe that someplace between March and June, you'll find the Durham report, and on the heels of that, the William Barr report, that I believe is going to absolutely rattle the entire nation as to the truth of what you and I already believe is the, William Barr calls it, the predicate to the investigation by the FBI, and the fact that they brought in through the Hillary Clinton campaign and the DNC, they brought in Russian collusion, Ukrainian collusion, foreign intervention in the 2016 election. And they have that planned for the 2020 election. And they're already now trying to cast aspersion on the potentiality of a 2020 election by President Donald J. Trump, saying that he will again pervert or contaminate the upcoming election. Here's something, Greg, that Alan Dershowitz says the impeachment, the attempt to impeach, he says here, Alan Dershowitz says the impeachment is not credible at all, end quote. And yet he is another one that is not a Republican, not considered a conservative, but a Democratic liberal. Greg Jarrett, an attorney himself and one of the people with Fox News, Greg Jarrett says the IG report reveals FBI misconduct and abuses in anti-Trump probe of Russian collusion hoax. In unmistakable terse language, Barr denounced a small group of now former FBI officials for their misconduct, for their malfeasance, and their continuing malfeasance, and a clear case of the FISA process abuse, end quote. And he goes on to literally decimate the Horowitz report in that the findings were not summary, did not come to a conclusion of placing the blame where it should be. Ladies and gentlemen, you can dial 831-0917, 831-0917. We still have a few minutes remaining in the broadcast that you still have an opportunity to jump in for dialogue and discussion. We're talking today with one of our sons, Greg Youngblood. Greg holds credentials with ecclesiastical jurisprudence, that is, in constitutional law and also in theology and Bible doctrine. Greg, I'm looking at an article that says the 10 biggest revelations to expect from the Horowitz report. And I'm just going to recite two or three of them from this massive article that maybe we can talk about. And then I want to wrap up with where it's going and why this is taking place. Here's a summary based on Solomon investigative reporter. I can't recall his first name. Expected revelations. The scope of the failure and the misconduct. Solomon expects the Horowitz report to identify between 6 and 12 mistakes. He found out with 17 acts of misconduct ranging from altering governmental documents to failure to provide the court with evidence and information required under the FISA process. They lied, ladies and gentlemen, they lied to the FISA courts. Greg, should there be any law that would be possible and proper against these that presented lying, falsified documents to the FISA courts?
It's a criminal act to bring false information to the court, and they went beyond that, and they withheld exonerating information. I think you'll see a series of indictments. I believe McCabe is under indictment now. They literally altered some of the filings with the court and rearranged things. I mean, the 30,000 emails that were spoken of by Carter Page were dealing with Hillary Clinton, and they attributed it to the DNC hack and literally changed the language so as to make it as onerous or as bad a thing as they could make it. But, I mean, what we're seeing here appears to be the setup. You know, it's the drugs being planted on the suspect, the gun being planted on the suspect, Scoopy Coltrane, you know, setting up the speed trap. You know, we're going to put up the low speed sign after the person's already passed, and then create the circumstances. You know, they claim to be concerned about Russians communicating with campaign staffers, but any legit concern along that line would mean that they would have direct contact with the candidate and say, hey, this is going on, we need to perform an investigation. But they didn't have that. Matter of fact, it was just the opposite. This was a setup to undermine the candidate and the future president. So you know, they went and they fudged the standards to suit their political objectives. This was their insurance policy. Page and
yes,
Strzok talked
absolutely
about this. This was intended. This entire thing was intended to place this cloud. You know, with all the investigations, the two-year, $40 million Mueller politically driven investigation. This was intended to place a cloud over the president. This was intended to keep people at home during the 2018 election with concern that the president may be a Russian asset. What did this do under the 2018 elections? We had over, I think it was over 50 Republican representatives that chose not to run for re-election. Some of them were rhinos, and God bless them, I'm glad they're gone, you know. And other ones, I think, were afraid that maybe they would be connected to a Russian asset in the White House. So they didn't run for re-election, some of them that may have been good. And good folks stayed at home. They're going,
yes,
I can't go out and vote for these Republicans.
Greg,
I mean,
Greg,
look at how it worked to their benefit.
Greg, I'm going to take 1 minute to put the cap on the icing, if you please, on the discussion today. I've got three observations. The Senate will stop this fake illegal trial, and Trump will not be put out of office. The Socialist Marxist Democrats and the DNC, they've designed this to impugn the president for the 2020 election. Here's an article that says Hillary Clinton would be the front runner if she enters the race. If Hillary Clinton were to attempt a third race with the White House, she would be the front runner for the Democratic nomination. She says, I've had to make up my mind. She says, I've been inundated, deluged. There's been a deluge of those pleading with me to enter the race. Hillary Clinton will enter this race sometime between now and March of next year, and she will be the candidate that faces Donald Trump in the 2020 election. The stage is being set. That's purposeful. That's intended. Greg, thank you for joining us today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on this broadcast. Looking forward to meeting you next time as we face the issues.
Florida, located just 1 mile south of I-295. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study. Prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in this same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.